भगवते वासुदेवाय
described
May
by me
भवतः अञ्जयु
चिग्मयाथना
in which there is very terrible suffering. Sukadeva Goswami replied, My dear king, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life, with his mind, words, and body, are not counteracted through proper atonement, according to the description of the Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering, as I have previously described to you. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that although Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee, Sukadeva Goswami did not immediately speak to him about the strength of devotional service, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 14.26. Mamcha yoga vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatityayitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Devotional service is so strong that if one fully surrenders to Krishna and takes fully to his devotional service, the reactions of a sinful life immediately stop. Elsewhere in the Gita 18.66, Lord Krishna urges that one give up all other duties and surrender to him. And he promises, Aham tam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. I shall free you from all sinful reactions and give you liberation. Therefore, in response to the inquiries of Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, his guru, could have immediately explained the principle of bhakti. But to test Parikshit Maharaj's intelligence, he first described atonement according to Karmakanda, the path of fruitive activities. For Karmakanda, there are 80 authorized scriptures, such as Manu Samhita, which are known as Dharma Shastras. In these scriptures, one is advised to counteract his sinful acts by performing other types of fruitive action. This was the path first recommended by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. And actually, it is a fact that one who does not take the devotional service must follow the decision of these scriptures by following pious acts to counteract his impious acts. This is known as atonement. So this subject matter is a very interesting subject, because the living entity, the conditioned living entity, is always going to do something wrong. And when one does something wrong, then that is not proper. The proper human life is meant to elevate oneself, is actually to become God conscious. That is the purpose of this human form. So now if the human form can be engaged in the Lord's service, that is the proper perfection. But when we perform our activities, unless we have that inclination to serve the Lord, then according to conditioned nature, we're going to work for our own pleasure, the own pleasure of the mind and senses. Therefore, then, if one has that mentality, one still has to do so according to God's direction. If one wants to do things, one has to follow God's direction. And that is the Dharma Shastras. So they give what the Lord says is how a materialist should act, so that there will not be difficulty. And if they don't act according to that, then, as described in the previous canto, then they go to the hellish regions, where they have so many difficulties. So then the idea is that human form is not meant for hellish life. It's not even meant for pious life. But it is meant for transcendental elevation. But the living entity, because of his conditioning, he does not want to engage himself properly in these transcendental activities. He wants to engage in sense gratification because of the false identity with the body and mind. So then the point comes up here is, how does one save oneself from all these hellish conditions? So now what is happening, as Prabhupada points out, is that Sukadeva Goswami wants to test Parikshit Maharaj to see how serious he is about actually understanding this point. Because it can be taken at two levels. It can be taken, how do I save myself from hellish conditions? But I establish myself in very nice pious conditions, and I enjoy it because of this. Or how to get out of the whole cycle of birth and death, because whether pious or impious, it's still material and still binds us to the material world. So which does he mean? When he's talking about becoming freed from these things and liberated, what liberation is he talking about? Simply being freed from material disturbances, or does he mean being freed from the actual material condition? So he first will, he's starting to explain about the Dharma Shastras. That if you follow them, they give. Okay, if you've done this material thing wrong, you do this material activity that's pious, means you've done something wrong, it means it's sinful, impious. So the impious material activity is countered by a pious material activity. Something that's beneficial. Like that. Some kind of, something that corrects. Now, why is it done in this way? Because the materialist only knows the body and mind. So therefore, if they do something wrong with the body and mind, you can correct that by bringing in another element of the body and mind to deal with that. Then one can relate to this. And that's like the one can understand this. Just like someone may not behave properly. So you'll find he can understand someone else who doesn't behave properly. Because they can relate to that. They can understand the mood and motivations and all that. So the Dharma Shastras are meant for this purpose. We are engaged in material activities, but we don't know how to, we don't know anything beyond that. So if we talk about something transcendental, there's no interest in it. So one won't be able to apply, won't be able to relate to it. What has it got to do with this? You know? It's just like I have a gross object and there's a problem with it. I expect that there's a gross dealing with it to correct it. You know, I may not understand subtle dealings with it. Right? I cannot understand that someone is behaving in a particular way. And therefore, I will deal with them also. They've done something rough, we will deal with them rough back. I can relate to that. But if I tell them, no, the person's behaving roughly because of, you know, some emotional disturbance and this and that. So if you deal with them in this subtle way, dealing with the you know, emotions and the mind, you can change that rough behavior. But you'll find most people will not appreciate that. You know, it's rough dealings. It deserves rough dealings. You know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, it works, it's very practical. Right? You know, and even better is, you know, two eyes for one eye and two teeth for one tooth. That's even better. You know, like that, you know, teach them a lesson. Right? Set an example, right? Like that. But the subtle things are not even appreciated, even on the material platform. Let alone when you say the solution is actually spiritual. So, therefore, the Dharma Shastras are there. They're there for the materialistic mentality. So now Krishna doesn't say, give up these performances of prescribed duties in the, you know, beginning stages of the Gita. But he says, ultimately, that's what has to be done. And he will protect one. There will be no sinful reaction from giving up those duties, as long as you replace that with surrendering to him. In other words, how much devotional service you establish, to that much, although the Dharma Shastras don't need to be taken into consideration. Because Prabhupada mentions at the end of the purport, is if you don't follow this, then says, and actually it is a fact that one who does not take the devotional service must follow the decision of these scriptures by performing pious acts to counteract his impiety. They have to. It's not a question of, I don't believe in it, I don't want. It's just the way it is. You know, fire will burn whether we believe it or not. So those who are not devotees, if they do not act according to the Dharma Shastras, then they will go to hell. It's that easy, that clear. There's not another alternative. It's not that the alternative cultures, alternative societies can overcome that. You know? It just doesn't work. It can't. We may think what we like, but it doesn't. So as we take up devotional service and get fixed in that, then that means these things start dropping off. Right? And then we don't worry about this. Therefore, he starts off with the point of atonement, because atonement is one of the first things we drop off. That's one of the first things we drop off. Because we understand that the reason someone's done something wrong is because of the material disease. So the solution is, you may have a system of atonement that may correct their mentality from sinful to pious, but it still is material. And according to the Gita, the modes of nature are always fighting with each other. So therefore, you know, you're piously situated with the mode of goodness, but with time, passion, ignorance will prevail. So it's no solution. It may be a temporary solution, it may be a good solution for today. But it's not a long-term solution. So therefore, only devotional service can change that. So if someone has a material problem, it can only be solved by spiritual understanding. That is the thing. We see. Otherwise, if that wasn't the fact, then how is it that we all join this movement so easily? We just walked in the door clean, you know, started following the regulative principles, chanting Hare Krishna, and that's it. You know, what atonement did we do for all the different sinful activities that we performed? You know, you kill one cow, and for every hair on that cow's body, you have to take birth and be killed, right? And generally we find that hamburgers, by the nature of it, is not made out of one cow, but many cows, right? So one can understand, you know, especially the modern Western culture, how sinful someone is. Everyone walked in the door clean. All Prabhupada did was ask, you chant Hare Krishna. He didn't say, well, now you have to become, go through some atonement. So such sinful things can be counteracted by chanting. That means anything can be counteracted by chanting. So this is the first principle, is that atonement actually has no meaning, because all it does is correct the material, the conditioned nature, but it still leaves it conditioned. So unless that is connected to Krishna, that there's a purification, in other words, you correct by devotional service. So unless it's a service, it doesn't really correct. So that is the point that will be made as it progresses. That the materialists, they become very much, you know, impressed by these things. But it doesn't actually free one from hellish life. It may immediately, but it doesn't in the long run. So only by devotional service can actually one be freed, because that frees us from the conditioned life. By instruction, that is what frees us. Oma jnana timurandasya jnanam jana shalakaya. Shalaka is cutting. It's removing. So the material life is being removed by instruction. So by association of devotees and by devotional service, by hearing instruction and performing service, you know, for Krishna, in other words, jnana and vairag, then one's devotion increases, one's realization of Krishna increases. So this is what was the actual platform. Therefore, Krishna makes this point. Devotional service is so strong that if one fully surrenders to Krishna and takes fully to his devotional service, the reactions of a sinful life immediately stop. Therefore, Prabhupada was establishing and pressing this full surrender. That we take up this surrender to Krishna, because then if we do that, then all these reactions stop. And one's obligations to the Manasamita are very small. Very small. It means you have a conditioned nature, you have to engage it in some activities, So then some of the aspects of just social interaction are maintained, and that's it. But more than that, we don't bother. It means you have to have some way to interact with others to establish relationships. So then that is done by this following of the prescribed duties here. But more than that, not. But if we don't take up fully that degree that we're not, then that degree, then these things are, we're liable to it. So if we're following the order of the spiritual master very strictly, then that is our dharma. That is our dharma shastra. You know, that is our dharma shastra. Just like Narottam Das Thakur saying that the instructions of Rupa Manjari, these are his dharma. You know, and following these is his life. So one is following dharma, but now the dharma, material dharma, comes replaced with the instruction of the spiritual master, instruction of Krishna. But if we don't, then, as Prabhupada pointed out, then we must follow these other things. Because we're humans, so we're liable, we must follow. Therefore, Krishna recommends us this full surrender, or at least endeavor for full surrender. Because then one has less to follow. But if not, then one has to follow. That is the difficulty. So Krishna himself personally recommends, and the acharyas all recommend, that endeavor for full surrender and coming to that platform. Because otherwise, getting involved so much in the material, all the dharma shastras, is very difficult. Very difficult. Like that. And they'll just give you a material result. Of course, if one wants a material result, then that's the place to look. Right? If one is interested in dharma, artha, kama, then that's the place to look. But if one is interested in pure devotional service, then he will follow the path of devotional service for Krishna. Then that will bring one to the transcendental platform, the liberated platform. And then from there, one is freed from all these sinful reactions. Nothing is left. Any questions on this?
Imagine the attempt to achieve full surrender may mean that one functions to some extent on an artificial platform. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a proper use of words, but
gets across the idea.
Or one may be repressing, let's just say, overly repressing material desire, which results in some type of a backlash, maybe a massive resurgence of material entanglement. Mm. And I was wondering, certainly in endeavoring for full surrender, one has to be be aware and keep balanced in that process. I wonder if you can give some clues as to how to maintain that balance so that you don't succumb to this resurgence.
What is the reason for full surrender?
Majority
time, what do you mean by full surrender?
Full surrender. So, in that, there's a few points to look at. One is, let's look at the material side of what we are repressing. So now we have pious life, which means basically following the Vedic culture. And then we have impious life, which means not following the Vedic culture. So when Krishna says in the Gita, what will repression accomplish? He's talking about repressing pious life. Is that you are repressing the natural, pious, divine qualities of the human being. you know, that you are giving up one to follow another. So he's giving up the pious life of a Kshatriya to follow the pious life of a Brahmin. Like that. So that would be the first point to understand. So now when, you know, in applying to ourselves, then we have the aspect of, when we're talking about repression, we're talking about repression of demoniac animalistic tendencies. Though a major part of the world may follow it and think it's okay, it still doesn't make it above board. You know, it's still the path to hell. Like that. Because we're even talking about the pious life, if it's not followed properly, you can end up in hell. You know, like King Nriga, you know, he gave away something twice, so then he got a reaction for that. So then we have to look at what is the process. When we say that we follow the culture, follow these things, and we're trying for full surrender, it means this full surrender means that whatever we're doing it completely for Krishna's satisfaction. We're not trying to keep the fruit for ourselves. Like that. That's the first stage. It means that's what's attainable by us at this point. Then actual full surrender, that is only by the grace of the Lord and the devotees that we can come to the platform of prema. So that is by divine grace we can get. But by endeavor, you know, proper endeavor, then we can come to this platform of desireless work. So now, let's see. Forgot the previous thread. Answer yours. Oh yes. So then. In this path that Krishna is describing is following the prescribed duties or the practice of, or the process of practice, then there must be knowledge. Otherwise, if we just do the practices without knowledge, that's not so good. Because if we don't have the knowledge, then we just know I do this activity, I get this result. And then naturally, without higher knowledge, we'll be attached to the result. It's natural. I do something, I get a result, then it's natural, I identify with it. So unless I understand that the result's coming because of Krishna's sanction and the actual work of the three modes, then I can't become detached. So if we don't work with knowledge, it means understanding what are the prescribed duties, what they're for, what does each aspect do, why I should be submissive to authorities. What is that purpose? You know, what does it do? How does it benefit me? You know, I must understand Krishna is the supreme authority, and then he has the line of authorities. By surrendering to authority, then that principle of surrendering to those who are in a position of authority then develops in the heart. Then we can surrender to the actual transcendental authorities and get spiritual benefit, and ultimately to Krishna. So we practice that here, because we are not going to be able to do that with Krishna. Krishna's devotees aren't going to let us practice on him. You know? Like that. Not, means he comes as his archa form. But personally, in his swayamrup, they're not going to let us practice on him. They'll come themselves, you practice on them. But you can't practice on him. So that principle is there, so I want to surrender to Krishna, I have to be able to surrender to the principle of authority. Like that. So when I understand this, then it changes my whole viewpoint on how I deal with it. So each and every aspect of the culture that we see Prabhupada has given us in the Vedic, and he's recommended, the Acharyas recommended, the examples of the Bhagavatam, we have to understand why. So that's the point of a Tattva Brahma Jigyasa. It's not that I ask the question today, why am I suffering? Then I become a devotee and I stop asking. No, that's where human life started, by questioning. So here, Sukh Pariket now has heard all these first five cantos. And now he wants to know, okay, now you've explained to me karma kanda and the jnana, all these different things, hellish, how do I become freed from this now? How do I actually get out of this? Now the test is, he actually want to get out of this, or he just wants to get out of, he's been disturbed by the description of hellish life and just wants to be freed from that. So now he's going to describe the karma kanda and the atonement. Then if he's not satisfied with that, he says, no, I want to go beyond that, then he'll take him up higher, like that. In other words, you don't give something that somebody doesn't want, or they won't appreciate it. You don't give the most valuable jewel if someone doesn't appreciate it. They may say, I want it, but unless they have the qualifications to value it and take care of it and all that, then there won't be any benefit in giving it to them, even though they say they want it, because they say they want it means they actually, I mean, if they mean it, they actually value it. Otherwise, it's just, it looks interesting. You know, like Jambavan's kid. He saw this nice jewel, right? He doesn't understand the value of it. But it glitters, he likes to play with it. Like that, different shapes and all that. So then when, you know, Krishna came to take it, then the kid starts crying. Like that, Jambavan comes and all that. So, but the kid doesn't understand the value of it. So he can't keep it. He's just playing with it, throwing around. Who knows? He may throw it out in the bushes or, you know, break it. He may do anything with it. But he wants it. So in the same way as the guru tests the disciples, you say you want, do you actually want? What do you actually want? You know, he may just be, you know, free me from material anxiety. Like that. You know, I have this curse on my head, I'm going to die, so how do I get freed from going to hell? And I go to the heavenly planets. He wants to see, does he actually want to go back to Godhead? So that's there. So we must have knowledge. So generally we see, if we understand that, then we see there is no repression. You know? It's just like, let's say, I grew up out in the street. And anyone who says something I don't like, I just pull out my gun and blow them away. And there's people who live like that today. It's just perfectly normal for them. So now we bring this person in the society of devotees. Now do we say he's overly repressing himself, that he doesn't walk around with a .45 caliber and anytime anyone tells him something he just shoots them? No, we'll just say that that's just animal life. When we say repression means you have the nature to eat, to sleep, you want to develop, you need money to a certain degree, you need facilities to a certain degree, you can have that. We don't repress the need for that, but do it according to the proper standard of human life. But to the way you're accustomed to as animal life, that may be, because that's just bad. That doesn't have anything to do with reality. But how to change from one to the other is by knowledge. That's the thing. By knowledge, one can cross. Like that. That makes the difference between the divine and the demoniac. The demoniac mentality is, I don't know. I just think I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, and I just do things however I like according to the modes of nature I'm in. If I'm in the modes of goodness, I may be more gentle, modes of passion, a little more rough, mode of ignorance, more rough than that. But we actually have to take those and purify. So we don't have to change the personality, we don't have to change the nature, we just have to purify it. We have to purify. And then in that, then we move. So that is the process, and that's done by knowledge. So that's what we're getting from the books, from the guru, from the sadhus, is this knowledge, how to purify. So if we put the two together, our activities with knowledge, gyan and vairag, then we advance very nicely. Vairag means we perform activities. Why is the word vairag is used? Because vairag means you're renouncing something that you've gained. You gain something by performing an activity. So I perform proper activities, that gives a result. I give that result to Krishna. Therefore it's called vairag. Otherwise, we would say jnana and sannyas. Sannyas means you don't do any work that creates a fruit. But vairag means I perform work that creates fruit, but I don't keep the fruit for myself. That fruits for Krishna. Therefore, jnana and vairag are used. And they're non-different. Like that. Someone who follows that path, or whatever they do, is done for Krishna, then it doesn't matter what varna or ashram they are sannyas. They're actually sannyasis because they're not attached to the material world. But they're purifying, they're intelligent. That's why it's called buddhi yoga. They're in purifying their conditioned nature by engaging it in its very activity. You know, the principle of taking out a thorn with a thorn. I realize, okay, I belong in this varna and in this ashram. I perform those duties, but because I'm doing it for Krishna, I'm a sannyasi. Like that. But if I want to keep the fruit, then I drop down and I am those things. But if I do it for Krishna, I'm not any of those things. I'm just engaging, since I have to engage the body. The body is a reaction of my previous desires, my prarabdha karma. This is the fruit of my previous activities. It's here, I engage in Krishna's service. It's what I have. I don't have something else. So I engage the nature. The mind works in a certain way, intelligence, the body. And I find how it's best situated, engage that in Krishna's service, with the result is for Krishna. But I have to understand what is happening, why I do those things. Why should I do that? That we must question. But even how we do that, that even is given to us. That is called, it must be submissive inquiry, not challenging inquiry. Then we learn. If it's challenging inquiry, we don't learn. You know, then it's just emotional. But if it's submissive inquiry, then actually the intelligence can work. Then you can gain, you can get the intellectual understanding. So therefore, when you say it's an artificial platform, it's there, but it's accepted as the standard platform. It's called practice. Like we say, sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti means you're practicing the principles of devotion, but we're practicing them. You know, like we're singing kirtan for the deities. But now, devotional service means, in its pure form, means every syllable, every moment, is being sung for Krishna and thought of for Krishna. I'm thinking of Krishna. Fully absorbed. That's called devotional service. Now, if one moment less than that, I'm not remembering Krishna, it's not devotional service. It's not pure, unalloyed devotional service. There's some mix of some karma and jnana in it. Therefore, that practice by which we remove that, that is also called devotional service. So we can say it's artificial from two points. One is, okay, we're materialists, so to act on this devotional platform may be artificial. But then from the other side, that's from the body and mind. But from the part of the soul, it's artificial to be working in sadhana bhakti. I should be fully surrendering. It's artificial to work on such a low platform. I should just fully surrender right now and become a pure, unalloyed devotee on the spot. But because of my attachment, just a habit, because of habit in the material world, I'm not doing it. I'm unable to do it. So therefore, I use this principle of habit to create now new habit. This is a very important point on why Krishna makes the point that if you want to advance nicely, you don't do someone else's duty. See, I do my duty because it is a reaction of my previous desires. Previously, I just had desires. That fruit has resulted in this body and gross and subtle body. So now if I work with it like that, I'm not creating any new material desire. So I burn up what's here, finished. I engage in Krishna's service. I burn this up. I come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then I cultivate and deepen my relationship with Krishna. You actually endeavor for that very seriously, I come to the platform of pure and loyal devotional service. But now if I do someone else's duty, that means I have a nature, but I don't want to follow that, I want to follow someone else's nature. That means I have to create an identity that will create it, that is best done by a different gross body and subtle body. So what I'm doing is I'm creating another body. By my desire, then that creates, and so then that has to have fruit and everything and result in that. So it's better not to do. One is, it's not suited. That's the obvious thing, the practical aspect. But the other aspect is then you're creating a new situation to maintain us in the material world. Therefore, we're, whatever situation we're in, we're just happy with that, do that, and get out of here. You know, it's like, who cares? You know, who's in charge, who's not in charge, who's doing this, who's the movers and shakers, who's following, who's leading. is that whatever I find myself doesn't do that, burn that up. It's like the example is given by Vishwanath, is that fuel, it makes fire. You know, you have some fuel and there's a fire. So the fire is maintained by the fuel. But now, if it's done properly, then you will find that the fuel burns is exhausted, the fire also is exhausted. So like that, this material endeavor, this sadhana bhakti that we will do, in other words, by having the knowledge of the material world, how it functions and all that, and performing our prescribed duties like that because of our conditioned nature, when we come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, all this becomes burnt up and it's finished. So there's no need to perform those duties anymore. There's no need to work on that platform anymore. Then one can just fully surrender to Krishna. So that's where Krishna's point, that one sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanamaja. That's it. That one just surrender unto Him. That's what we want to come to. And then all that will be burnt up. It's all gone. So that's what we're trying to do. But that can only be done if there's knowledge. And knowledge it means by studying, by association. So if we really want to develop things so that they go very nicely and easily, there has to be more emphasis on, or a lot of emphasis on studying, Shravanam Kirtanam. And when that is very strong, then the encumbrances of the material endeavor become less, because you're obliged to less. And you're able to burn up that less. So it's much easier to start with a little bit and burn that up than to start with a big amount and try to burn that up. Like that. Though we see persons like Parikshit Maharaj, Ambarish, and all start with something very big. But they're able to burn it up. But that's because of their knowledge, their position. We see Parikshit is cursed by that Brahmin boy. That Brahmin boy is not as powerful as him. He could easily, by his own potency, counteract that. But he sees it that the Lord is the one who's doing. He's not the doer. He's performing his prescribed duties according to Krishna's direction. But now Krishna's thrown in this other element. So putting together, it's Kali Yuga. Putting together that this is Krishna's sanction and his desire to see Krishna. That's why he's called Parikshit. He's always trying to find Krishna, examines everybody to see who's Krishna. Therefore, he doesn't get upset with that Brahmin boy. He doesn't counteract him. He just says, okay, it's Krishna's giving me this opportunity to leave. So out of knowledge, he is able to give that up and go. Knowledge and an interest in devotional service. It means that proclivity for pure devotional service. So therefore he goes that direction. Otherwise you take someone else, they wouldn't have done that. They would have endeavored to either, how do you say it? Counteract the curse, or to do something about Takshaka. Right? But he didn't do either of those. Means this description of Parikshit Maharaj and the Bhagavatam. We have to understand, this is the Parikshit Maharaj that goes with the pastimes of Swayam Krishna coming and, you know, Lord Chaitanya, Swayam Krishna coming as Lord Chaitanya. In between those, there's this Parikshit in the Bhagavatam. The Parikshit in the Mahabharata, some of those pastimes that are described, is not necessarily this one. Right? Parikshit will be, this pastime goes on 1,000 times in the day of Brahma. One of those times is this pastime, where Parikshit is a pure devotee. And the others, you may or may not be. Because the avatar of Krishna and the avatar of Lord Chaitanya are not Swayam Krishna. They may be Vishnumurti, Shaktivesh avatar. So in here, we see that mood of full surrender. So he takes that. But that's because that's his interest and that's his what he's heard, what he's studied. So if we increase that, then we see one situates oneself on a higher platform where there's more obligation to Krishna and less to the material nature. And then our entanglement is much less. But if we don't, then we just take the work side then we're obligated to follow the Manasamhita. So there's no option, actually, that we can just take Western culture and just follow it. The option doesn't exist. Is you either take the Vedic culture, be a materialist, take the Vedic culture as it is, follow it, or become a surrendered devotee and just take only how much of the Vedic culture you need to hold together the social structure so you can have proper interaction. Because the whole cosmic creation is based on rasa. Right? So the element of rasa has to be there. Therefore we must have social order. Otherwise, how do we create rasa? You know, parents and children, husband and wife and friends and leaders and followers. And otherwise, how do you create exchange without it? And in a conditioned state, we have to have that exchange. It means the living entity being Ananda, there must be exchange. Ananda means there must be rasa. So until we come to the transcendental platform that we're working purely on exchange, spiritual exchange between ourselves, Krishna, and the devotees, therefore we're going to have a need of material exchange. Friends and families and these kind of things. So that much is kept to placate the conditioned nature. But it's being done for Krishna. The results are given to Krishna. This way we engage it, so we're satisfied, and we purify it. So the process that for the materialist would be them, how they would become bound, is our process of liberation. Right? The brahmachari follows his, he can go back to Godhead. Grihastha follows theirs, they go back to Godhead. But in the karmakanda, the grihastha can't go back from that, because those are binding. But here we're taking the grihastha dharma, and because we're doing it for Krishna. The fruits are given to Krishna. It's liberating us. So it's a different, the paradigm is completely different. So the elements that are used are the same. So we see there isn't an option. It means one can take, Krishna does accept in the Gita, that you cannot follow prescribed duties and be completely absorbed in passion and ignorance. And if you engage that in his service, it's accepted as devotional service. But one must understand that the reactions of the modes are still going to be there. You do something in ignorance, it's going to react with the mode of ignorance. You go out and yell and scream at somebody, like that, they're going to yell and scream at you back. You can't expect that you're going to deal in ignorance and everyone else is going to deal in pure goodness. Like that. So therefore, it's rough. So Krishna recommends, since we're conditioned and we have to deal with the material nature, better to do it in goodness according to prescribed duties. Then, because of its pious nature, therefore it's much more satisfying. And it runs much more smoothly. There's much less obstacles. But one must study and understand it. That's the thing. One doesn't understand it, one can't apply it. You know? One has no knowledge, just like you get some gizmo. If you don't know the nature of it and how to run it, one may break it. Therefore, it has a manual that comes with it. You read that manual, then you can very happily and peacefully run the machine with very little endeavor. But if you don't know, with great endeavor you push this and that and try so many things and hit and miss, and then maybe one day you get it to work or maybe you break it. So we could blame the machine, but actually what's to blame is not the machine at all. Or who created the machine. It's ourselves that we didn't read the manual. So if we have difficulties in our application of our social life and exchange, it's because we're not as well acquainted with what we're dealing with. You know? We don't actually know what it means. We know the elements, but we don't actually know what it means in the basis of relationship. And that's, if you check, any difficulty comes down to that, the relationship. That somehow or another, I feel that, you know, we're being shortchanged on some platform of emotional existence. You know, some leader didn't do something that I felt either sheltered by or inspired by. Somebody I'm working with didn't do something the way I expected. Someone junior to me didn't act in such a way that was a proper reciprocation. So you can relate them all back down to that. So then if we follow Krishna's example of the social structure, then we see that we have a platform which to actually establish proper relationships. But you have to know how to make it work. One has to study. Then it functions. So that's where it is. It starts with rasa. It means because there's a rasa, a parental rasa, therefore you have the restrictions of that rasa. Right? A husband does these, he's called a husband. A wife does these, she's called a wife. You know? Then they do these activities, they're called a parent. Because they relate with their children in these ways, they're called parents. And children relate in certain ways, they're called children. So everybody has restrictions, and that makes rasa. So the greater the restriction, the greater the emotional result. That is the thing. When there's less restriction, the senses are let more wild, the emotional exchange is very minimal. You tighten up on the senses, you find the emotional exchange is very great. So now it's just a matter of, on the material platform, of which do you want? The freedom of sensual expression or the freedom of emotional expression? That's the choice. There isn't another choice. So the Vedic culture puts more value in the emotional. Because from the emotional, that's the like perverted just aspects of the spiritual rasas. Like that. So you can purify and purify yourself from the conditioned nature and establish yourself by that process of engaging the emotional platform in the Lord's service. We can come to the transcendental platform or the liberated platform. But if we let the emotion, the senses go wild, you know, it doesn't, one can't understand anything higher. Someone situated on the sensual platform cannot understand emotions and spiritual relationship. It's not possible. Like that. Therefore the Vedic culture recommends this. But the Western culture militates against this. Its whole thing is buy this because your senses. Buy this because of your position. Buy this because... So the consumer society removes, actually by its nature, must destroy the emotional platform and establish your own sensual. Because then you'll buy more. Your senses are wild. Well, if my senses are controlled and my relationship with others is based on the emotional platform, I don't need to buy so much. Because my relationship with my husband and between husband and wife is not so much based on things, it's based on them together. My relationship with my kids is not based on millions of toys I give them, but it's based on the relationship between two living entities. I don't have to buy so much. I can just go for a walk with my kid, and that's satisfying. I don't have to bring him 10 million toys. So it's not good business. So the emotional platform gets in the way of that. Unless you can use that, you know, for that. Okay, if you really love your, you know, wife, you buy her diamonds, right? Diamonds, that one came up, I think, in the 50s or 60s. Diamonds are women's best friend, right? You know, dogs, man's best friend, and women's diamonds. You know, so. Because there were some people that had millions of diamonds, and they figured out, well, we got to sell them. So then they made this propaganda. Because diamonds not even the most expensive of all the jewels. It's not the best. But they made it seem like diamond was the best. You know, emeralds, rubies are much, much more expensive. So, like this, so we have to see with knowledge actually what we're dealing with. Then we know what to do. So, yukta vairagya means we can engage any material thing in Krishna's service. But culture, we have our own culture. That is the central element. We have our culture. Right? But things we can engage. So we have to make this distinction. So the modern culture breaks down the actual ability to distinguish between emotions and senses. You put them together. Husband and wife love each other because they have lots of sex. If they don't have lots of sex, they don't love each other, and marriage breaks up. So it's based on the senses. Prabhupada makes that point. Well, the Vedic standards is based on the emotions. And whether they look nice, don't look nice, have sex, don't have sex, the relationship goes on because it's a relationship between two people relating on this kind of rasa. So it's a totally different approach. So it restricts on one side, you gain on the other. like that. Or you restrict on the emotions, and you gain on the senses, one or the other, like that. So the whole Vedic concept is that you restrict the senses, and then that establishes very clearly the rasa. The child listens to the parents. That establishes very nicely the parental rasa. If the child is submissive to the parent naturally has that mood of shelter and wants to give the best to the kid. So it enhances it. So by the child not shooting off his mouth and calling the parent all kinds of things, it enhances the rasa. But now, so in exchange, he gets more attention and more input on a more deep platform. And he comes out a better person. But if he's allowed to shoot off his mouth and say whatever he likes, then they can do that, but now it restricts the parents', you know, really willingness. They don't want to tell him anything. So that means one of the things is the parent is supposed to train and guide the child so that they know how to become a valuable part of the society. So that restricts that, you know. Kid doesn't want to eat this or do that and that, so that restricts how the mother can feed and that. He wants to dress in his own way so the parents can't dress him how they know it's properly. Doesn't want to talk about, you know, philosophy, this, that. So what's left? Nothing's left. All you can do is give him toys. And that's what's left. And the businessmen don't mind. But that's what we're left with. And we have to be very careful that we don't fall trapped into this same trap. Like that. Means big, big businessmen have already worked this out. And they're laughing. You know, I give an example. I was reading in the paper the other, you know, last year or 2 years back when this MTV came into India, and someone was asking this Murdoch who owns it. He asked him, "Don't you think it's kind of like, you know, not so high quality stuff? You know, this can be kind of culturally detrimental, don't you think?" You know, they're asking him, and he says, "Yeah, of course. I don't let my kids watch it." You know, like that. It's just business for him. People want it. They're fools enough to buy it. Then great. He makes money. He makes money off of their foolishness. He won't let his kids watch it. He knows it'll rot their brain. You know? So like that. It's just, they make money. People are fooling. That's that sucker born every minute. Right? That's the American business proverb, you know. You can always, you know, dupe somebody. So in the Vedic culture, they didn't let Vaishyas do that. He had to sell things people needed, you know, at a reasonable price. But it doesn't mean that you can't unlimitedly expand in that. Everything else becomes cheap because of that. So therefore, even if you make a little profit, it's still a lot in proportion. It's the same, you know. If everybody's doing that, there's millions of vegetables, this, that. It's very cheap. But whatever, you make something. When you buy that other things, it's very cheap also. You know? So it works out. So it's just, restriction must be there. You want anything good, it's just like if I want to cook something nicely. If I take 3 hours, it's definitely going to be better than if I take 2 minutes. You know, if I get some Maggi noodles and cook it in 2 minutes, it's not going to be really high quality cuisine. You know, it's not going to be, what is it, haute couture. You know, it's not going to be, it's going to be just something very ordinary. But if I restrict myself, I take that more time, on higher standards of cleanliness, better qualities of items, then I get a much better result. So that's the whole purpose. If you don't restrict, you don't actually get a high caliber of the emotional platform. You know, even just materially speaking. And if you talk with basically anybody, they'll agree that you can sacrifice a lower for a higher, but not the higher for the lower. Right? I can sacrifice my senses for a relationship. But I don't. Everyone will say it's bad to sacrifice a relationship for the senses. Everyone will agree. Any materialist will say. So in the same way, is even though we are now, so we restrict the senses, and then that gives us, you know, you get the rewards on the emotional platform. The same time is then those we use for Krishna's service, and then that then generates the spiritual rasa. That generates the spiritual development. By restricting the senses according to Krishna's direction, it enhances the middle platform of rasa. Right? The lowest platform of rasa is the sense and the sense object. Then higher than that are the relationships between people, based on actual relationships, not on the things. Then higher than that is the spiritual relationship between the living entity and the Lord. So when one restricts the lower ones, one gets the higher. So that is what is being recommended, and that's what Prabhupada gave us. He gave us that culture. We can refine it, develop details, but that doesn't mean the principles can be left. If we leave them, then we have to adjust with that. We want to leave the very, you know, surrendered culture that Prabhupada gave us, then we must follow the more details of Maranashram. And if we're more surrendered to Krishna, there's less we have to follow. The framework stays, just so many details drop off. The mood, in other words, the essential emotional mood remains, and those things that need to keep it in place. Right? Just like the essential mood between the parent and the child is that the parent has that mood of shelter and care for the child, wants to give them the best. And they take care of their, you know, all their sensual, their emotional, and their, as much as they can, their spiritual needs. That's the essential point. So now you can expand that into details, how you apply that. But you can't leave that point. Otherwise, it's not parental rasa anymore. Parents don't care for the kids. Kids don't care for the parents. It's not actually parental rasa. It's attachment. You know, there's a biological attachment there, just of I and mine. But it's not actually parental rasa. The experience of actual parental rasa is not there. Because that's experienced whether you're with the person or not. The mother's cooking for the child. Like that, you can experience that rasa. The child's not even there. You know, then when the child's there feeding this, that, you're doing for their benefit. That can be experienced. But if we base it on the things, then only when the senses are touching the sense objects do you experience it. You know, and kids get tired of toys after a week, 2 weeks anyway, and then they don't care. So it makes it very, it's a very difficult platform to work from. You know? Good business, but terrible socially. So we have to, if we understand this, and we take Krishna's points in the Gita and the examples given in the Bhagavatam of the application of the principles given in Gita, then it becomes very nice. We can see how we want to know. Okay, they said follow. So how? In here we're seeing how they here we see how a guru and disciple relates. Here, very important principle for a teacher and student. You know, especially on these, don't teach something that you're not sure if they actually want to know. In other words, don't reveal knowledge that somebody hasn't asked for. Otherwise, they'll take it cheaply. I can take the same principle. I want to give advice to a friend, but unless he's in the proper mood to take it, I can tell him the best jewels of advice, he won't take it. Okay? So therefore, one doesn't speak. One waits for the opportune time when they're in the right mood, then one speaks. So just this example here, just in this verse, what's going on, then this example of how parents can deal with the kids, gurus with disciples, you know, authority with those others, or even a friend with a friend. It means wherever somebody is giving someone else advice or direction. So, I mean, here's a very, very practical. I've heard devotees say, Bhagavatam's not practical. It's not, does 5,000 years ago maybe it was. This is very practical today. I mean, you go and read all these books that you have to pay so much money for, and they'll tell you exactly the same thing. But it's right here in the Bhagavatam. So that's the thing, is we just have to see what is going on. This is, in other words, the philosophy that Gita talks about is being lived in the Bhagavatam. That's being lived.
A couple of questions have come to mind and you can answer. One, it seems that, kind of summarization, that the one big gap of knowledge that would propel one into falling from the spiritual to the sensual platform, or at least emotional to the sensual platform, is not an accurate analysis of where one, how one should engage. In other words, you know, I'm really a grihastha, but somehow or other I've miscalculated, my knowledge isn't strong. I put myself in a sannyasa ashram, arrange things to my mind that way, so I'm living kind of alive. That's accurate.
Like that. That would be one aspect. Or just within the grihastha ashram, I didn't deal with the wife or the child properly, and therefore I got a bad reaction.
So then the other point that comes to mind, let's say I've made an accurate analysis of that positions me in vanashram, but there doesn't seem to be appropriate facility to engage myself according to the analysis that I made of my positions within the structure. Now, you made a point that maybe not completely filled out the Vanashram that the Prabhupada gave us. It's kind of an abbreviated version. But according to our surrender, that will be adequate in what we've gotten. But if our surrender isn't so much, then it has to be a more full-blown version of the Vanashram. So, it would seem then that that there's a big crash in social development these days. That perhaps there should be more of a cry for full surrender, and that would counterbalance that perceived lacking. But on the other hand, there may, and just like if we refer to like in Thakur Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's saying that one of the four basic needs of a human being to be satisfied in this situation, one of them is that he has a clearly defined role in a healthy society. So, I mean, that's one of the big quotes for social development. Mm. So, and I'm a little bit in a quandary, I don't really fine-tune understanding of that aspect of knowledge.
Means, in other words, the social structure has to be studied. And here it's very clearly pointed out that basically when Krishna says there's only his path, that's all there is. So either you can follow the Varnashram and go towards Krishna, or you can not follow it and go away from Krishna. Because there's only one path.
I understand that.
No. So this means, and then in our options and how we're going to approach social development, we basically have to accept Varnashram. And even from what I saw in the social development up to last, 1 year ago, they were still toying with the idea of whether Varnashram was the paradigm they wanted to take, or whether the Amish or the Mormons or some other thing or like that. But basically, Krishna and the Acharyas point out you don't have an option. Really, if you really want to have some proper social, you only have Krishna's system, because Krishna made the system. Now, within the system, then you have two levels you can work at, which is going to give the dilemma that you're speaking about, is that one where the endeavor is very determinedly for full surrender, though we have not necessarily attained it, and that will give what Krishna talks about as nishkam karma. Means you're performing the karma, but the fruits are Krishna's. Like if you go back, in the 70s, anyone did anything, no one could claim they did anything. If anybody did or said, this is mine, everybody would think they're crazy. Because the whole mood was nishkam karma. Right? But Krishna also describes, if you can't do that, then do your work and give the fruit. So that's the sakam. So the sakam, they still follow the same social rules. But you must make a much more clear distinctions. When in the nishkam, it doesn't really matter who's got what so much, as long as it doesn't affect, the workings of their ashram and their service. You have to match the two. So you may have a brahmachari who's a temple president and has tons of facility, because it matches his service. As soon as he's not doing that, he doesn't need the facility. Right? But then if you're working in the sakam, then you have to be more restrictive. Because the sakam means I'm more attached to the body and the mind. So I can tell the difference between social orders only when there's clear external distinctions. you know, like that. You know, when the sannyasis walk around in rags, then I can tell they're sannyasis. But if they don't, then what's the difference between them and me? So it has to have much more clear material distinctions. While in the Nishkam, because everybody is sannyas, whether whatever their varna ashram, it's not as clear. Like we go back, so it doesn't need to be as clear. You can have a brahmachari sannyas with lots of money, grihastha with not, or the opposite. Nobody cares. It means you need it for your service, you have it. Because no one's saying it's theirs. But as soon as you say it's theirs, then you have to make these very clear cut distinctions. So then just what has to be seen is what if we're going to deal with this sakam, then we have to follow the directions that are given in the Bhagavatam Prabhupada gives according to social direction, which is very full. It's very complete. One actually studies it, it's very complete. You know, he doesn't tell you what kind of silverware to use or like that. But it's very complete on the mood of interaction. Because even you have nothing, even we say, okay, I want to follow, but we don't have a set up society, but that doesn't keep us from dealing with our family in the proper way. That I deal with my wife or deal with my child in the proper mood is not affected by anyone. I mean, you can see in Calcutta, people live on the street. All they have is a plastic sheet to their name. And you can see really, you know, solid parental rasa happening. The mother's out bathing her child, you know, in the water that's coming up, you know, the Ganga water that's coming up in the street, and, you know, cooking right there in a little clay pot on the side of the road. And you can see, and the rasa is there. They have a very tight family relationship. It's so tight that the kid identifies that I'm a street kid. This is my home. You know? And when he grows up, he'll be a professional street person, you know? Because the emotional platform is so satisfying, he doesn't think I don't need to be here. His world is complete. So even with no facilities, it can happen. Because it's rasa. It doesn't require things. The situation enhances. Just like you have the parental rasa, now you can, the mother and child, even if there's nothing, it can be there. You can enhance it by having something to eat. Mothers love to feed the kids. So you bring in some food. It enhances it, but it doesn't make it. Because the mother's feeding the child, that doesn't make the motherly rasa. That enhances the already existing mood. So if you think, just because I'm feeding, that makes me a mother, no. Like that. It means, okay, that end of it, but one's not experiencing the actual exchange of emotions. So the lower enhances the higher. Right? So the prescribed duties enhance our remembrance of Krishna. While we're doing our duties, we think of Krishna. Because of our knowledge, we know it's Krishna that's actually doing it through the modes of nature. So, okay, let us say I'm a manager. I want to manage. But actually, me making the right decisions and telling people and they agreeing to it and get it done and enthusing people and it's all going on and I make all the right, it's just the modes of nature. All I'm doing is desiring that it happens, and Krishna sanctions. And because my desire is sincere and Krishna wants it to go that way, it comes out great. But if Krishna doesn't want it, I say all the same things to the same people, same situation, it doesn't work. Arjuna, the best, our archer. You know, the great pure devotee, you know, emperors of the world. And he's taking back, you know, 16,108 girls. You know, and he only has to protect them, right? He's fought with Bhishma, Drona, Karna, defeated them all. And there he is, coming back on the road. A bunch of cowherd men with sticks. Not mantras, not mystic powers and astras and all that. Sticks. Come out and walk off with all these girls. And he can do nothing. Because Krishna didn't sanction that he could stop them. Then he understood, yes, all of these ability I've ever had, that was all Krishna's. That's what Krishna was talking about. So when Krishna removed it, didn't sanction it, it didn't happen. Then he went back and told Yudhishthira all this. And then they decided, oh, Krishna's winding up his pastimes. So it's time for us to also wind up and go. So the reason his prowess didn't work is it's time to go. So that's the thing. Vedic culture, you go along, you're doing all the right things, and then at one time you see things start going wrong. Krishna starts taking away, and then you go, wow, it's time to pack up. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, when these things happen, it never happens. No one curses the emperor. You just don't do it. You curse the emperor, you wipe out the whole world. It's more sinful to kill an emperor than it is to kill a Brahmin. Because the emperor protects all the Brahmins. A king, that's another thing. That's lower than a Brahmin. But the emperor, he protects all the Brahmins. So it's as equal or worse. So nobody's ever done that before. It's just never happened. So that it did happen, it can only happen with Krishna's sanction. So therefore he thought, okay, it's time to go. He didn't fight it. So, like that, is that we have to take these prescribed duties, as Prabhupada describes here in his books and the examples are given in the books, and take them and try to apply them. And if we can't see how, then try to figure out why. What's the knowledge behind it? What's the purpose? What went wrong? You know? What went wrong? And then we actually can get the right result. Otherwise, we're like the guy who goes out, buys the gizmo, and then doesn't bother reading the thing, thinks he's so smart, he can do it, pushes this button and that button, the thing gets jammed, doesn't work, and then he just says it's a bogus machine. And like that, devotees try running Varnashram, doesn't work for them, they throw it out. Prabhupada so many times said, you know, when you take off the cataract, you don't take out the eye. That's why, Om Ajnana Timirandasa, you remove the cataract. Otherwise, it would say, you gouge out the eye. By the gouge of knowledge, then the eye is removed. No, it says by the shalaka of knowledge, the cataract is removed. Now I can see. You know, but unfortunately, that's not the American way. So, you know, the American way is baby bathwater, everything. You know, and everybody else who's around, you know, anyone in the room, you know, they're all condemned. You know, burn the room down. It's like, you know, build a new place.
So, just kind of clarify from my own mind, it seems that what you're saying then is not so much that there's a lack of social development, there's a lack of knowledge that facilitates individualized social development. So everything's all there. And real social development means rasa, appropriate rasa. And even though there may not be material trappings for that's externally receivable, there's still plenty of facility to have the rasa.
Yeah. And then from the rasa, everything expands. Mm-hmm. Like you put one drop of yogurt culture, and all the milk, however much milk you have, will turn into, I have a room full of yogurt. I mean, a milk, I put one drop of yogurt, with time, the whole room will turn into yogurt.
So, in other words, if the proper mentality is there, then from that, from the rasas, the external trappings of
the Vanashram
will manifest.
Yes, they'll come. Because one comes from the other. Right? One comes from the other. The mood is there, that caring mood for the child, then naturally then there's reciprocation. Right? Then if that reciprocation is there, then all the things that go along with it. It just one starts the other. Just like I go up to somebody and talk really gently. Generally you'll get a gentle answer from them. And or if someone even comes up and starts dealing with me roughly, if I talk gently, they'll calm down. So depending on how you act, you invoke that out of the other person. So the recommendation is you act within the realm of, you know, duty, which is the mode of goodness, and you'll invoke from others the other, and then trappings go along with it. You know? Because someone in a particular mode, they have particular things they like. You know? And if you're in different modes, you like different things. So some special mode of goodness, it can be very simple. Like that. So you can start simple, you can make it very elaborate. You know? Just like you're going to cook a sabji, very simply. You can put more ghee, this, that, and put other spices and make it more elaborate. But the same principle remains. Like that. But, it, you know, the cooking goes on. So that's a very good summary that you get. So, in my mind, when Prabhupada said 50% of the work, you know, or if he did say, said 50% of that work is left to be done, and that's establishing Varnashram. That means the elements that he gave now make it work. Otherwise, all the varnas and ashrams were in place when Prabhupada was here. I mean, no one can say that he didn't establish brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. Someone would have to be real unobservant to point that out. Then he established preachers, gurukuls, teachers, pujaris, these kind of things. He established management. He established businesses. You know, go up into the spiritual sky. And then everybody else helps those. So it's done. But now it's a matter of understanding what's here, training people in it, especially those how to lead it and train others. It's one sense a very simple, straightforward thing, but it's very subtle. Because you're dealing with emotion. That's how you know what's right and what's wrong. It goes back to that. So actually, only the devotees can really follow it properly. Because they actually understand what is rasa, while others don't actually understand. Therefore you get the asuric varnashram system, which means according to birth, not necessarily according to qualities. You get someone like Duryodhana sitting on the throne. He could manage, but he had in no way the qualifications of a kshatriya. You know, as far as culture goes. Karna, he was an expert archer, but he didn't have the culture of an archer. Shakuni, he was doing the work of an advisor, he didn't have the culture of it. You know? Dhritarashtra, also, because of his attachments. So you put that together, it makes a mess. You had a big war. So that's the asuric varnashram. So even though you're following the varnashram system, because you don't actually know the purpose of pleasing Krishna and the higher nature of it, it has a tendency to go down. Well, the daiva varnashram is always bringing up, like that, trying to elevate. Because you have something higher. It's just, you know, the shoot the rhinoceros principle. You try for full surrender, at least I'll get, I do my duties and you know, try to do something for Krishna. Like that. But if I just take it, well, okay, social development, you know, the spiritual life later, you know, let's get into this, I'm going to get something lower. You know? So it's like, because of the goal, therefore the process is chosen. If I understand who I am and what my goal is, then I'm going to choose a process to get me to that goal. But if I should set a shorter term goal, I use a different process. That. If I have a long-term goal, I'll use a different process. You know, I just say I just have to make some quick money right now. I'll use anything, but if I want to set myself up for the next 20 years, I'll take a completely different way. You know, because I want something last, steady, so it may be more slower, more methodical. Therefore, sadhana bhakti. My goal is pure unalloyed devotional service, so I go through the methodical stages of sadhana bhakti. And that will get me to that goal. But if I just want to make some money, if I figure all of the problem in the social development is just, you know, who's in charge and who's got the money, then, you know, we're not going to get very far. But if we understand this, we've misunderstood how to be in charge and how to follow and how to use money, then we'll get somewhere. Because then we connect that to Krishna. Then we can see actually how to be in charge, how to be a leader, how to be a follower, how to be a parent, how to be a child, a student, a teacher, in all these different things. Does that make any sense? So we'll end here.
Yeah.
Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jayanta Dai Gaura.